The House Transportation Committee will come to order. Welcome, everybody. I think we're going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2817. And Patrick, remind us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2817, we heard this bill on March 25th. It's the one that eliminates the requirement that ODOT notify persons with a certificate or pending application to operate as a for-hire carrier and conduct a hearing when a person applies for issuance, extension, or transfer certificate to operate as a for-hire carrier for persons or household goods. It eliminates the requirement that a person providing pack and load services register with the department, provide proof of insurance. We had at that time, and hopefully you still have, we have copies coming, Madam Chair, of the -1 amendment, which is the amendment that the requester of the bill had asked that the committee consider. Are any members missing the -1 amendment for this? We have copies coming, as I said. You have in your the one thing you do have in your packet is the fiscal and revenue statement for the bill with the -1 amendment. The measure with the -1 has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact. And I believe Mr. Russell is here and could do a much better job of overviewing this than I just did.
Thank you. Mr. Russell, do you want to come up just in case there are any questions?
Yeah, remember, -1 is extensive for the most part.
Committee, any questions, any reorientation to the bill? I've been listening to it in the archives. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob, just to clarify, because I remember going through all of this, and it seems like all parties were happy with the -1 amendments.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, that's correct.
Representative Call.
Mr. Russell, thank you. You and I had a brief conversation online about the pricing, that there's no floor set so that the competition could still, prices could still fall through and bringing more competition to the marketplace, so that there's actually a net benefit to the consumer on this and it keeps in place necessary regulations. Could you talk about that?
Madam Chair, Representative Call. There is the ability for one of these companies to do what's called independent action, to set a price different than the collective price. So absolutely, you're correct.
Okay.
Are you entertaining a motion, Madam Chair?
I am. just sorry. I just wanted to make sure everybody knew the -1 amendments were the replacement to the bill that you discussed while I was gone.
I move the -1 amendments.
Thank you. Representative Call has moved the -1 amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none, the -1 amendments are adopted.
And Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2817 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Call has moved House Bill 2817 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Bent?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Boone? Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Shopler?
I have 15 questions, Madam Chair. Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Call?
Aye.
Chair Meyer?
Aye. The motion has passed. And with that, House Bill 2817 will go to the floor. And I don't know that I'm seeing anybody jumping up wanting to carry this, but I actually haven't carried any, so I probably could carry this one. And the work session is closed. And I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2902. Patrick.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As Mr. House Bill 2902 establishes the Non-Motorized Vehicle Transportation Fund, authorizes the issuance of lottery bonds for transportation projects for non-motorized vehicles and pedestrians and deposits proceeds into the fund. It allows ODOT to make grants and loans to public bodies and private entities for transportation projects not eligible for state highway fund monies that are selected by the Transportation Commission. Stipulates that at least 10% of net lottery bond proceeds authorized by the measure must be expended in each of 5 transportation regions.
Thank you.
If I may, I'm sorry, yes. One other thing I should mention, Madam Chair. This measure has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
I may be able to.
Thank you. And with that, I'll call Representative Bailey and Senator Monroe. And I saw Senator Atkinson. Oh, okay, there he is. You want to come on up, too?
I'm standing right outside the door.
Mind if I kick off?
All right, Jason. No, go ahead.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm distracted. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jules Bailey, and I have the honor of representing House District 42 in beautiful Inner East Side, Portland. And a couple of weeks ago, this committee heard House Bill 2971, which would increase the percentage of highway dollars dedicated to sidewalks and bicycle paths. At that time, if you recall, I made the case for investing in non-motorized transportation as an economic development strategy and spoke to you about Oregon's growing bicycle industrial complex. I won't repeat those comments today, but I know that many people here will testify about the benefits of a non-motorized vehicle and transportation investments. But because of the limitations on the use of the highway fund dollars, that bill that we discussed last time would only have funded bicycle and pedestrian facilities in the road right-of-way. The bill before you today, House Bill 2902, and its counterpart, Senate Bill 635, would provide funding for the rest of non-motorized transportation system, trails, paths, bikes, bike highways, greenways, and other dedicated facilities that are separated from the road right-of-way. And these are really the kinds of investments that can really increase the number of people who choose to walk and bike. Many people are especially hesitant to use bicycles more regularly for everyday transportation because of safety concerns relating to riding in traffic, and dedicated bikeways and paths that are separated from the road provide many of the security features that many people need choose to walk or ride. Yet, this is the last piece of the transportation puzzle that I know of that currently does not have any obvious source of state funding. A few years back, the same could be said for most other multimodal transportation investments. For example, air, marine, rail, and public transit facilities. And that's why the legislature created Connect Oregon, which dedicated lottery dollars to these investments. House Bill 2902 is really what you might call a Connect Oregon for Trails, and it's modeled directly on Connect Oregon in several ways. One, it would create a new fund for the construction of non-motorized transportation facilities and use lottery bonds to support the investments. Two, it establishes a competitive process based on local matching funds to ensure the best projects are funded. And three, it funds projects all over the state. It uses the same regional distribution formula that Connect Oregon uses. So you're going to hear plenty of testimony about why Oregon should get some skin in the game on funding non-motorized transportation, which can be better described as active transportation. So I just want to address a few of the mechanical questions before you hear testimony from folks on in support of the bill. First, this is a freestanding bill, and I won't discourage you from passing it onto the floor with a unanimous do-pass recommendation. But, of course, this is an issue that could also be addressed within the context of the overall transportation package in 2120 or whatever the package ends up being. And, in fact, there are Dash 4 amendments to the transportation package that are identical to this bill. Second, before there's a work session on the bill, we certainly want to make a few amendments, specifically deleting the word vehicle from the name Non-Motorized Vehicle Transportation Fund. And the Treasurer's Office also has some amendments that they're requesting to ensure consistency across lottery-related bills. And third, you might notice that there's a blank for the number of dollars on the ceiling in the lottery bond issuance. We're going to hear some more testimony about that later. We wanted to make sure that we're following some of the format of Connect Oregon. There's envisioned in the neighborhood of somewhere around $10 million as that ceiling, but obviously that's going to need to wait to see what the overall budget picture looks like in the line for lottery funds as well. And finally, as I noted before, House Bill 2902 and Senate Bill 635 are counterparts, and both have an equal number of Republican and Democratic sponsors. And together they have sponsors from every metropolitan area of Oregon. So it's not a partisan issue. It's not an issue on which Oregon is divided along geographic lines. And we hope that you'll give it your consideration. So thank you for your time, and urge you in working to ensure we provide funding this session for active transportation.
Thank you. I think we'll go ahead and finish. I have you next, Senator Monroe. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rod Monroe, Senate District 24, which is East Portland and Happy Valley. A little bit of my background. Besides having served over 14 years in the Oregon legislature, I served more than 12 years on the Metro Council, where I was much of that time the head transportation guy, chair of JPAC, worked on trying to find ways to appropriately spend the scarce federal dollars that came in, clean air dollars called CMAQ money, that could be used for non-motorized needs. I'm also a bicycle rider. And every time I go out on my bicycle with my helmet on, my wife worries about me getting run over by a truck. But when I'm going to be riding on a trail that's a pedestrian bike trail, then she's more comfortable. And, of course, you know, when Mama's happy, everybody's happy. When Mama's not happy, nobody's happy. You know how it goes. So I really believe that we greatly increase the number of people that commute by bicycle and that use bicycles for recreational uses if we had more exclusive trails. Since we built the three bridges that connect the Springwater Trail in southeast Portland to the Oaks Bottom Trail, the use of those trails, both of those trails, has increased dramatically. And any time you go down Springwater Trail now early in the morning, as I often do when I'm out for my morning run, the bicycles are whizzing by me. And same thing of the Oaks Bottom Trail. We have a fairly substantial percentage of people that work in downtown Portland that actually commute by bicycle now. There's an increasing number of people in the Bend area that are commuting by bicycle. Increasing number of people in the Medford area, certainly in the Eugene area, that are commuting by bicycle. Even see a few of them running around here in Salem. Anytime somebody is commuting by bicycle, several good things are happening. They're not polluting the air. They're getting some good exercise, battling obesity, which is an epidemic in our country, as you know. They're saving money on gas and so on. So, you know, bicycle riding is something that we ought to be encouraging, and the best way to encourage is to provide some funding for exclusive bicycle pedestrian trails. Now, I sit on the subcommittee of Ways and Means for Transportation, along with Representative Gilman and others, and so we know that funding anything this session is going to be very, very difficult. So it's very, very important that we get this bill, and again, 635 is the one I sponsored. 2902 is the same bill, just introduced in the House. So that'll be the vehicle, I guess. But it's very important that we get it down to Ways and Means so that Ways and Means can establish the appropriate funding level, which will probably be a lot less than I would like. But get the thing on the record. Get it established. Get it in policy so that in the future, when the economy takes off again, we hope, there may be better opportunities for funding this at a more appropriate level. So it's very important for your committee, Madam Chair, to take action on this bill and get it to Ways and Means. I served on the Trails Task Force all last year. I was the only senator appointed by Metro to be on the Trails Task Force. Trails Task Force studied the use of pedestrian trails all over the world. They actually took a trip to Copenhagen and Amsterdam to see how they do it in Europe. Believe me, we're way behind. But that Trails Task Force made it very clear to me, even reemphasized the fact that building more trails, and there's several that are in the planning stages, all over this state will benefit the state, will benefit our people, and will have a tremendous long-term effect. Thank you very much for hearing me, and I'll turn it over to my colleague, Senator Atkinson.
Thank you.
Hi, for the record, Jason Atkinson, I represent Southern Oregon. I don't want to say what already else has been said. I'll just make a few brief comments. I wanted to show my support for this measure. I think it's an interesting framework that probably would work. I think Connect Oregon, for all of its detractors, probably multiplied its supporters because we actually did get multimodal transportation things, projects on the ground. As far as this bill goes, I think it's building on that concept, I think, is good. There's two elements to this that are important. Certainly, the effect that it has on small communities. I represent an area that has a tremendous amount of small communities, one of which is the town of Rogue River. Now, Rogue River started to raise money to finish their bike path. I think the last time they had about 1,000 people show up to do what's now called the Ride the Rogue event. And the bike path, for as much goodness as it is for health and obesity, actually was part of their Chamber of Commerce spiel. So it was actually a big attraction for them, so it was good. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about all that. But let me just tell you another personal reason. Many years ago, I used to be involved in cycling as more of than just a passing interest. And I used to do a few races a year with this woman by the name of Jean Chin. Jean was an amazing athlete. She was gifted. She was extremely strong, and she was like one fast twitch muscle, which if you know about two kinds of muscle groups, there's slow twitch and fast twitch. She was really smoking fast. And every time she'd show up, she'd win. I mean, it was a little annoying, I used to tell her. Jean and her husband, Mark, were fantastic bike racers throughout my time, or chunk of my time in cycling. And through a tragedy, Jean passed away. And a bunch of us, her friends in the cycling community, named a big chunk of what we call the Southern Oregon Bear Creek Greenway after her. That greenway has never been completed since I was in the eighth grade. And originally it was supposed to go from Ashland to the communities of Talent, Phoenix, Medford, Central Point, Gold Hill, Rogue River, and then ultimately to Grants Pass. And since the time I was in eighth grade a few decades ago, and another century ago, it has always suffered from this fits and starts funding mechanism to actually get it done. When Connect Oregon came through, we actually had one of the biggest knockdown dragouts I've ever had was with a particular city who was receiving those funds but would not apply those funds to completing a portion of this path. And believe it or not, the only stop on the entire Medford to Ashland to Grants Pass when it would be completed is because of a city who was fighting over Connect Oregon dollars. So I made a commitment a few years ago in another life of mine to help finish this bike path. And ever since then, in the 1980s, it was rails to trails. In the 1990s, it was let's just work and however we can figure it out. But it's always been kind of left on this back burner. In Southern Oregon, we have a huge opportunity, and I decided to join this bill to finish this trail that I gave a commitment to years ago. And it's almost done, but it has not had a systematic approach. I believe you'll see some testimonies from some folks in Southern Oregon who support the bill and support it as it relates to Salem and Eugene and Portland and Bend and et cetera. And those are all fine causes, but mine is purely helping out my district to connect these small towns on the path. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Atkinson, how were the funds raised for doing most of the trails that you've completed already? Because it sounds like you're 80% done.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. It's been, I mean, by trying to list all the various different ways, I probably will forget some, but I mean, it's been bake sales to marathons to fun runs to this Ride the Rogue to writing letters for foundations. There's actually a Greenway, whatever they call it, a foundation that races, but it's never been able to get it all the way done. And so the problem is, so you get all this private money together, and then you get that private money and private volunteers that butt up against ODOT, and then ODOT that butts up against a city. And all of a sudden, you've got all this fundraising activity to hire lawyers to try to get and manage through the state government. And so then they get people like Representative Gilman and Senator Atkinson and a handful of other people engaged. And all we do is spend our time trying to undo government, basically over a funding mechanism. If you actually took all the dollars that were raised to buy pavement and to actually do the project, there's probably would have been completed. But getting it through government has pretty much either killed all the enthusiasm or at the same time made it cost prohibitive.
I don't see any other questions. Thank you, honorable members, for coming in and testifying. Eileen Brady, Rex Burkholder, and Scott Bricker.
Chair Beyer and committee members, I'm Eileen Brady. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to give you a brief introduction to some of the testimony you're going to hear today, and our panel will be happy to take questions afterwards. And I have Randy, I'm sorry, what's your last name?
Tucker.
Randy Tucker, who I'm sure many of you know, is going to be the official clicker for us today. About a year ago, a series of folks in the Portland metro area were asked to sit on the Blue Ribbon Bike Trails Commission. Ooh. To do essentially what Senator Atkinson was saying, is to raise the profile of bike trails. It's one of these things that have been left behind as the years have gone on. For the record, I'm an owner of New Seasons Market, a grocery chain in Portland, Oregon, and Celilo Group Media, a publisher known for the Chinook book, coupon books, in the Portland area also. So I served as one of the business representatives on the commission. You can see that we have a stellar group of folks on this committee. This is not a group of slackers. This was not just a group of public officials. It was a tremendous mix of individuals who committed their time. I can see that at the top of the alphabetical lineup there, Eileen, Scott, and Rex are carrying all the water in Salem, however. So we were lucky to have this group. This was not a rubber stamp group. This group struggled with these issues, and we're pleased to report some of our findings to you today. And thank you to Senator Monroe, specifically, who sat with us on this project. This is a map, essentially, of the Portland metro area. The solid lines are existing trails. The dotted lines are proposed. There will not be a quiz on this map. I do want you to know that it represents a potential of 470 miles of bike trails that do connect with bike lanes, for instance. It's a system of connected bike trails, bike lanes, bike boulevards that we're looking forward to in the area. And ultimately, we think it's going to connect about 1.1 million folks, 34 town centers, probably around 700,000 jobs, 268 schools, and 24,000 acres of green spaces, which is a huge goal of metros. And please know this is not just kind of one of those Portland projects. I was happy to hear Senator Atkinson speak about Southern Oregon. There are projects going on like this across the state, Eugene, Corvallis, Bend, Springfield, Medford, among others, all working on non-motorized transportation systems of their own. So we took a look at what it costs, what it would cost to build this system, the level of funding it's receiving now, and estimated the end date that we'd potentially be funded on that, and it ended up being $21.98. So basically, we're in a situation where we can't wait that long for many reasons. Not only do we want to wait, don't want to wait 200 years, but we're wasting an opportunity to increase health. We're also wasting an opportunity to reduce costs. When we took a look at this from a business perspective, it turns out if you accelerate this process, you actually significantly reduce the cost. You don't have to mobilize the construction companies, et cetera, multiple times when you're doing small segments, for instance. So, key finding, accelerate this development. Don't stand by and wait. Don't watch it. It is important for many of the reasons you've heard already. And we are basically see this not only as just a transportation system, but as a parks experience. It really is a connection to natural spaces as well as a way to get you around. So, it grew out of the Connect the Greenways program in the area, if you know it. So, one of the big findings that came out of this was that we could seriously impact the percentage of riders who are commuting to work. You're going to see a slide here that shows that in Amsterdam and Copenhagen, we've got 35 to 40% of the people commuting to work, whereas in the Portland area, for instance, it's very small. It's in the single digits. So we have some opportunities there. Randy wants to click ahead, so we'll go for it. And we did struggle with all of these and really thought that this particular project, given what it can leverage, addresses greenhouse gas improvement, health improvement, reduced congestion from traffic, public costs we think go down. There really isn't a reason to not do this, particularly in the long term, but if we can accelerate it, we have huge opportunities. You may know that congestion is slated to increase fivefold on roadways in the area. Transportation costs are extraordinary, not only in we know that the long-term price of gas is going up, but we can get more mileage from the tax dollar as we look at this project. This is a particular issue for me. You may know that I sit on the Governor's Health Fund Board, and we've spent a lot of time talking about how do you put health back in healthcare. And if you focus on the insurance side of the equation, you never win. You only win when you focus on the prevention and the health side of it, which is one of the reasons that I've been involved in this particular activity. We talked about greenhouse gases. Motor vehicle miles are increasing overall, as you know. In Portland, actually, we've been able to show that the per-person miles have decreased due to bicycle transportation. They're increasing overall because the population's increasing, but basically we are talking about the ability to seriously reduce congestion and trips via car. Okay, if you remember anything else from this show, here's the slide. We know that we have a small group of folks who are what we call the strong and fearless that will ride. And no matter what weather, no matter what they're wearing, they think it's cool. They're the road warriors. We know and love them. They're a very small percentage. There are the enthused and confident, which may some of us in the room may be in that group. But the group we are really looking at is the group that we call the interested but concerned. It's a very large group who would like to ride their bike. They don't feel safe riding their bike. There's not a logical way to get them to a trail. And this is the group, by the way, that the folks in Europe focused on. They said, you know what? This stuff is for regular people. We don't want road warriors, lycra-wearing bicyclists. We're not building a system for them. We're building it for the regular people who are just trying to get to work. It's a very practical thing. So that's the group that we're going after. And I'm sorry, Randy, I don't remember this slide. But basically, the whole concept is we have seen that a lot of evidence that said if you actually make these facilities available, you'll see ridership increase. Build it and they will come. You know, I learned an interesting word. I'm sure you guys all know it. But mode split was a new term for me. And what this particular piece is telling you is that bicycles per capita in these cities, the first four are in Europe. If you spend the money, you can increase the bicycle, the use of bicycles as part of the mode split. And Portland, while doing strong, nationwide known for biking, does not come near comparing to what we can do and what we see in Europe. We think there's huge opportunities. So the Blue Ribbon Bike Trails Commission at the end recommended that we take a look at three different types of trails, look to implement one urban, one suburban, and one greenway or urban to nature connection trail as part of our package. So out of the 470 miles, we're doing some community meetings to target three potential trails that we could complete that we'd like to accelerate. But beyond that, we have a vision that you might be able to someday see a bike trail from hood to coast, just like the race. A bike trail from Portland to the coast. We're talking about bike trails through the wine country from Salem through the Willamette Valley. We think there's a huge tourist and hospitality interest in that. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to some other folks on the group, but thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Rex Burkholder, and I am a Metro Councilor representing the northern half of the city of Portland and also served on this committee with Eileen and Scott. And in addition, I've been chair of the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation in the metro area for the last 4 years. This group sets transportation policies and priorities for the Portland region. Last year, as Metro Council's representative on the Blue Ribbon Committee for Trails, I participated in this learning exercise we did, and actually Eileen didn't mention that when she came in to the committee, her position was, I ride my bike, bikes are neat, but boy, we have other priorities, healthcare, other things, and then towards the end was, okay, here's an answer, a partial answer for a lot of these issues that we face as a community, and I want to talk about some of those issues and fill in a little bit here on what Eileen brought in. At the same time, during that time, I represented Metro and our region on the Governor's Vision Committee, which developed concepts for the larger transportation package that you're considering, and I chaired the subcommittee on multimodal transportation for that. Thank you very much for the opportunity today to speak in favor of HB 2902. I want to talk about the general context that we're in, though, as well, to help you understand that. That will help you see how this relates to the bigger transportation vision. There's four topics I'm going to talk about. One is, how do we usually spend the dollars? Basically looking at our federal policies here, the appropriations and authorization process at the federal level, a bit about the stimulus dollars that we recently received, and then follow up with the work of the Vision Committee and the subcommittee. First of all, let me a little bit about the how we spend our current transportation dollars and where funding currently for trails comes from. Every year, and this is going to, there's a number that will probably floor you a bit, in the Portland metropolitan region alone, we spend nearly $10 billion on transportation. Now, the public investment in transportation in the Portland metro area is about $600 million. The other $9.5 billion are households and businesses who spend on trucks, cars, all forms of transportation. So this is a major investment of the public. And actually, when you look at households' expenditure, it is second only to the cost of buying and owning a home or renting is the cost of transportation. Major impact on us. In our area, because of past investments, we have had some studies that show that because people can drive shorter distances and drive less in our area, about $1.7 billion stays within the Portland metro area in the pockets of households, and they can spend it there. And I think that's an important piece to recognize here. So of the total, only about 6% is our public expenditures. But that's an incredibly important part of our transportation system, obviously. And then you take out that billions of dollars, you got about $25 to $30 million a year, or one quarter of 1% of that $10 billion total comes from the federal government into a pot we call the Regional Flexible Funds. It's the Surface Transportation Program allocation that comes to our metropolitan area. It's out of that small pot that most of our regional trails have been funded. Again, about one quarter of 1% of the dollars we spend on transportation a year goes to trails currently. And between these funds and occasional congressional earmarks and the transportation enhancement dollars that are distributed by ODOT, over the last 15 years, about $60 million have been spent on trails in our region. Okay, 15 years, $60 million. Another $17 million of the last 15 years have come from our regional funds, and it's primarily the natural areas funds that we've raised through bond measures, property tax measures, that we buy land to preserve for long-term habitat, but we've also been buying land for future trail alignments there. And right at the moment, I can't say at the moment that there are any direct state transportation dollars that have ever been invested in trails. And now it's opposed to the federal funds, of course, that come through the state that can be spent on trails. Now, I want to bring your attention to the first piece that I passed out here, and this is the Metro Region's request to the federal government for appropriations. So this is in the current appropriations bill. And this is developed from local governments, cities and counties, asking for, saying these are our priorities in the region that we'd like to have federal dollars coming to. And if you take a look at the appropriations list on the back of this handout, you'll see there's a total of nearly $16 million of requests for earmarking in the appropriations. And what I want to point this out to you is that shows you the demand out there. Okay, the market, these are your local governments that are saying, let's invest in trails in our community. And because of our constitutional restriction on the state gas tax funds, that's not an available avenue to fund these things. And so this is just to show you here, and these are mostly for trails that are not in the right-of-way. And this is actually a smaller list than we'd ever really look at, because we limit each jurisdiction to two requests. And so you can see how important this is to local jurisdictions, because with only two requests, you see this amount of money being asked for. Now, if you have another piece of paper that we developed to share with our congressional delegation, and this is on authorization. Of course, as you know, there's two bills at the federal level. You do your annual appropriations, and every 6 years you do your big appropriations, authorizations. In the middle of that, there's our list here for what we'd love to see built in the next 6 years of this. And we're combining our efforts with a national effort organized by the Rails to Trails Conservancy that's saying let's create a new pocket of fund of dollars at the federal level that helps all jurisdictions in the country build these trails. And so we're actually asking for $250 million authorizations to build trails in our area to speed up, to jumpstart that 200-year process we're talking about. And this is, again, 47 other communities in the country have also organized their request on the same way here and asking for $50 million there. Now, you can see there's a huge appetite out there, a lot of support in all communities in Oregon. Now, here's the trick, though, is that federal dollars always require a match. Okay, we've been relying on the federal dollars coming in to help us fund our system because our state system doesn't fund it. Our state system of financing doesn't fund it. Yet you can't use those dollars unless you come up with a local match. Now, as I said, we spent a lot of property tax dollars on this and other funds are flexible dollars. So I think it's key to look at that. We need to make sure if we get more federal dollars being authorized, we need to be able to come up with a match. So let me just skip the stimulus bill because I think I'm running out of time here. I want to say that the project in front of you or the proposal in front of you today came out of the governor's vision committee. It said we need to find a way to provide some dollars to help fund off-road trails because we don't have a current state source of funding for that. So this is a key piece of this here, and having worked on the two previous Connect Oregons, or was it three, and helping allocate those dollars on the regional and the statewide level, using a similar process is an excellent way to do that, where you say, here's some standards we're trying to meet, here's a little pot of money, give us your best shot. And so we've been able to meet the needs of a lot of areas in freight and transit around the country, around the state, and now we think that's appropriate to say the same for off-road trails. So we're not sure, again, how much we can afford this session, but we think it's really critical to set a precedent here and say that the state has a role in here. And to recall back again the high cost to the citizens of Oregon for our transportation. And it's mostly coming out of families' pockets and businesses' pockets. That's where the money comes from to pay for operating cars and trucks. And if they have options, the individuals in our community can save a lot of money. And we've seen people do respond to this. As Eileen pointed out, we do have a big response. When you have good, safe facilities, people will use them. And so we encourage you to help fill this hole in our funding package we have. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Bricker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Bricker. I'm the Executive Director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, and the BTA is a bicycling advocacy organization that works to create healthy and sustainable communities by making bicycling safe, convenient, and accessible. We're a statewide organization. And we've been lobbying and working on behalf of bicycles for at least the last five legislative sessions. One of the things that's most exciting for me about today, being here testifying, is that when I look back and I talk to my legislative committee chair, who's also here today, about what has changed in the last decade, is that perhaps when we were up here in 1999, we, the bicyclists and the bicycle organization, was really the only organization, perhaps, lobbying on behalf of these issues. In the last 10 years, not only have climate change come around to be a major issue that we're all dealing with today, and the environmental community coming on to this, but we have the green economy, which has also really come around as an issue, and we have businesses on board, clearly through the Blue Ribbon Committee and other folks you'll hear from today. The health community, bicycling, walking to school, and the issue about obesity and overweight among children. Small and large towns, not just a Portland issue anymore, but from folks around the state. And we also have another example for the economy is the tourism folks who are here today. I'm talking on behalf of this. The thing that the BTA has really worked on and we're really interested in moving forward is talking about how, and we believe, how bicycling and walking is an important part of the sustainable environment and specifically the economy. Are bicycle and pedestrian projects, do they provide impetus to improve the economy? Well, the answer is yes. In fact, there are studies and information that's shown that a construction job for a bicycle path or a sidewalk creates more local jobs than a construction for a highway. You don't require major machines. You actually use mostly labor and pour local concrete. And that bicycle and pedestrian projects, not only do they get people to work, but they often are the living room of people of communities. I could start with Portland, where I live, where the Vera Katz Esplanade, which was a $30 million bicycle trail, and seemed like big dollars, but maybe not in transportation dollars, is really the living room of Portland. Not only do thousands of people commute on it, but also at lunchtime, people go out and recreate on it, and then people, when they come to visit Portland, use that all the time to come and see the city, to enjoy the river. However, I also have listed a number of other communities that have used bicycle and pedestrian recreation and transportation as a way to highlight their community. One of my favorite examples is actually Astoria, and I've been visiting Astoria for many years, where the Riverwalk was something that was just part of the river. It was underutilized, and it was restored and has helped create economic development for that community. And if you go up and down coastal towns across Oregon, up and down Oregon's coast, you will see that bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure is a key element to the tourist infrastructure. Eugene and Springfield is another area where Eugene has probably Oregon's best trail network. And if you go down on a weekend or for or just on a day where there are folks commuting, it is very well used. Now there's an effort to really bust it and to connect, bust it over the freeway and get it into Springfield. And the city of Springfield is really interested in making this happen. And there's been a lot of work from the congressional level down to the recent project. I believe there was a ribbon cutting recently for the trail that goes over the bridge that goes over I-5. As was talked about a number of times here, the Medford, Talent, Ashland area, the Bear Creek Greenway has been a major tourism project for the local community and also a key transportation corridor. And then communities like in Washington County, Gresham, and Salem are also seeking funding and looking for non-motorized transportation facilities, not only for transportation purposes, but for local tourism and recreation purposes. The problem, as has been clearly stated already, is that there is basically no funding mechanism for these facilities. There is a current legal restriction, a constitutional restriction, that highway dollars can't go into those. And as Rex had mentioned, this was a major recommendation of the Jobs and Transportation Act that is being considered. So we seriously hope that this group will move forward, the committee will move a bill forward that would get this concept put into that, that larger construct. Thank you.
Representative Shoffman.
Thank you. Mr. Burkholder, or whomever wants to answer this question, what's the federal ratio for every dollar we put into these projects? What do we get out of the federal government?
Well, the eligibility is up to 90%, but the reality is that the federal funding is not ever that close. Close to that, just because there's not enough to go around. So it can vary depending on what the local sources are for that. But some projects are as low as a 20% federal match, but they can go up to 90 legally.
And may I?
Yes, follow up.
So each individual project around the state would be, they would get their own individual match depending on the project? And that would, is that how it works?
Yeah, and there's a couple ways of doing it. If you're in a metropolitan planning organization area, you know, there's six of them in the state, there is a sub-allocation that goes through, and then that money is decided locally on how to spend that. Terms of matching a project like this or a road project or transit, or there is a flexibility in the federal dollars that we don't have at the state level. So that's a decision making. And the key thing here is that a lot of times you don't apply for dollars that you don't apply for funding if you don't have a match for that or ability to carry it out. So what we've seen is that when we set aside some dollars of our flexible dollars at the regional level, there is an applications appear out of the woodwork because, oh, now we can actually go for it because there's money at the end of the rainbow. Versus if you don't think there's money there at all, you don't prepare the projects.
One more question. And then would this, does this allocation go through Representative Congressman DeFazio's committee?
The authorization project, which is the yellow or gold piece here, that is definitely in the bill that's being written by Representative Fazio's subcommittee. And if you look more closely, there's information here about the policy kind of questions we have for them. Authorization, I believe, goes through a different committee. Appropriations goes through a different committee, but this Representative Fazio's committee is writing the new transportation bill.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I suppose in looking at all these different systems, whether it's light rail or a freeway or a bicycle path or a sidewalk, all of these different systems of moving people around must at some point have to balance off against each other which one's the best. And I suppose a case study is going to be the Columbia Crossing project. And so there must be studies that indicate to all of us why we should be allocating these dollars to bicycles as opposed to one of these other modes of transportation. Is there a formula or a device that applies to each of these, or is this all case specific?
Well, I think that's a question for me. Metro, as the Metropolitan Planning Organization, does analysis of all projects that are on potential projects. It's state required and federally required in a regional transportation plan. And one thing that we're looking at is using a broader set of measures in order to understand what is the best, the most cost effective, the highest return on investment for any kind of any corridor that has a problem, say a congestion problem. And it's a wide range of responses that you can make. Is it more transit? Is it adding a parallel arterial? Is it providing bicycle and pedestrian facilities in a local community because people are using the highway because they don't have an option? And it comes out fairly clearly that a well-developed network that has that's available, all of all modes are available, then you have the least congestion and the lowest cost. And so that's what we look at in the metropolitan area, and other metropolitan areas do this as well, is look at what is the right balance there, and having a nice complete network is the right one. The challenge is can you fund them? And right now, as Scott pointed out, is that the constitutional restriction of our state dollars means that's for the roads. So if you want to do anything off the roads or transit, you need to find other sources of money. And that limits your options many times there. But we do analysis to look at the highest return on investment in terms of how do you move the most people for the least cost.
Madam Chair, if I may, Representative Bences, real quickly. In a number of cities, Portland, Eugene, Corvallis are just three probably the three of the best bicycling cities in our state. Those communities spend 1% or less of their total transportation budget on bicycling, however, have much higher bicycling as a mode split. So in Portland, in a sunny day, it's about 6.5, and a rainy day, it's maybe down towards 2, depends on exactly when it is. In Eugene, it's even higher, it's upward of 8%. In Corvallis, it's between there. So what we find is that while in every community, you're really going to choose your investments differently depending on which community you're in, that it is a good investment. It's a cost-effective investment. So even if you have 7% mode split for bicycling, you don't need to necessarily put 7% of your total transportation dollars to get that or even to move it forward. So we believe it's a cost-effective investment, and you could have a smaller percentage, but an increase where you have today and have larger and more people bicycling.
Can I add one thing, Madam Chair? Just one thing. As someone who is fairly new to looking at these types of transportation budgets, one of the things that became obvious is that the cost of building roads is so substantially high, more significant than building bike trails. So, for instance, an interchange on a freeway might cost you $125 million. A mile of bikeway might cost you $1 million. And so when you are looking at when someone's evaluating, we have to sit there and evaluate transportation dollars. It's very difficult, actually, to weigh these large purchases against these very small purchases when all of the dollars are going towards transportation. And so we're really trying to split this out and say, you know what, active transportation, it's a lower cost, it's a higher impact, it needs its own funding source so we can evaluate projects, like projects against like projects versus small trail projects against large road projects.
One more follow-up, although I have someone who needs to leave by 2, so I need to get to him. So,
thank you, Madam Chair.
And I can make sure these people stay a little while, so if we have other questions.
And we're always available as you know, to answer questions.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Only to say that me and Representative Krieger got a funding source for the bicyclists.
Is it in our forests and running in our...
So I'm going to go ahead and call Phil Selinger and Jonathan Nichols and Wendy Rankin. Well, I got 2 out of 3, so Phil, go ahead, so we can.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon, elected leaders. Happy to be able to slip in a little bit ahead of some of the others. I appreciate that. My name is Phil Selinger of Portland, speaking as board president of the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition. We're a nonprofit organization working to improve conditions for walking in the Portland region. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. Our focus is generally directed at sidewalk and crosswalk needs and conditions that make walking a safe and rewarding experience. However, there needs to be a range of walking opportunities for both short and longer trips and both routine and recreational travel if walking is to become a part of one's lifestyle. A pedestrian-oriented lifestyle improves personal health and reduces automobile dependence. Trails and pathways provided by House Bill 2902 and Senate Bill 635 would complement on-street facilities and facilitate public transit access. Trails that take the pedestrian away from the auto-oriented setting and closer to nature are needed in both cities and suburbs and in communities large and small. The legislature is already taking steps in House Bill 2120 to increase funds for much-needed on-street pedestrian facilities. A system of safe and attractive walking facilities, however, would increase work and commute options, provide construction and maintenance jobs, and be a healthy means of getting around for everyone, regardless of age or income. The Willamette Pedestrian Coalition urges your support for these bills. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't, I'm going to make sure we get any questions
sure.
for you in case you have to depart quickly. So I don't see any. All right. Thank you. It's Wendy, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Chair Beyer and members of the committee, my name is Wendy Rankin, and I work for Community Health Partnership, Oregon's Public Health Institute. We are a nonprofit that works out of Portland, but for the full state, for the whole state, to improve the health of Oregonians through public policy and advocacy for healthy environments. As it happens, today is Public Health Day. Perhaps you've noticed that. I know that Representative Bailey went on a walk with us at lunchtime today in the sunshine. I'm here as a public health professional to speak in favor of House Bill 2902, modeled on the successful Connect Oregon multimodal funding program. You know, public health places its focus on prevention. We are upstream from health care, and we use fewer dollars up front. So I wanted to say that our emphasis would be on those who potential users of trails that Eileen referred to as those who are interested but concerned. It's very important for us to get those Oregonians moving. Trails for walking and bicycling are an important part of our transportation networks, and the public health community stands in support of this form of active transportation. Indeed, it is critical. You all know that physical inactivity, along with poor nutrition, leads to chronic diseases such as diabetes and heart disease. You know it well. And we also have this current unprecedented increase in obesity. Oregonians are not getting the recommended levels of physical activity that they need. In order to get adequate physical activity, people need to be able to integrate that activity into their daily lives. So what can trails do? Trails are an ideal setting for daily physical activity, and they also provide a safe connection between community destinations. Just having access to trails has been shown to affect levels of daily physical activity. The American Journal of Preventive Medicine in 2006 cited that people who reported using trails at least once a week were twice as likely to meet physical activity recommendations than people who reported rarely using trails, according to that study. Trails appeal to all segments of a community because they provide equal opportunity for people of all ages, incomes, and cultures to be active. Sidewalks and bike paths in urban communities are important. They really are. That hardscape's important. But trails provide enhanced opportunities in ex-urban and rural settings. Investing in trails is just simply good practice for the health of Oregonians. Oregon's statewide physical activity and nutrition plan specifically recommends that state and local jurisdictions develop comprehensive planning and transportation policies that call for suitable infrastructure to increase the ability of Oregonians to walk and bike. Released just this week, the Senate Bill 931 Task Force for a Comprehensive Obesity Prevention Initiative recommends that a Transportation and Land Use Task Force convene to develop legislative recommendations that include health as a priority in land use planning and transportation decisions, including funding for bike pedestrian facilities. And the good news is that the same solutions promoted for obesity and its subsequent chronic diseases also enhance mental health and community social connectedness, promote enhanced air quality, thus reducing asthma, reduce traffic congestion and road safety, and reduce the onset of climate change, a public health issue of the present and of the future. The time is right for Oregonians to have enhanced environments for physical activity, and this legislation will provide opportunities for riding bicycles and walking. Active transportation means active living. Community Health Partnership, Oregon's Public Health Institute, strongly supports House Bill 2902 so that the people in our state can make the healthy choice, the easy choice, where they live, work, and play. Thank you for your time. And, of course, I'm happy to respond to any questions you might have.
Thank you. Do I see any questions? I guess not. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
And I did not see Jonathan Nichols, so, okay. Randy Miller, Scott West, and Amanda Rich.
Amanda was going to another hearing. She made it back.
Okay.
She left a bunch of questions.
Yeah, Jim McCauley.
Hi, I'm Randy Miller. Actually, I appeared before you last week for the license plates on the console, if you recall. We found an older one, just to show you. And actually, since then, we found a 1949. So if we ever testify before the Senate, we're going to do this. I don't know if you've heard about Senator Bruce Starr's suggestion. Have you heard about this yet for even another new plate that he's going to recommend for Oregon, for the Oregon 150, which I'm vice chair, so we're pretty excited about that, too. I am here in support also of these two measures, 2902 in front of your committee here before, and I'm a business guy from Portland and am very active in a lot of economic development and community development initiatives. And even though I can't make a commitment from these following business organizations in the metropolitan area, I just wanted you to know that I'm either chairman, former chairman, or involved with the Portland Business Alliance, Chamber of Commerce, Oregon Business Association, Greenlight Greater Portland, the Ambassador Program. So I'm looking at this as a business perspective because of the fact that's kind of who I represent. And it may surprise you, frankly, that a business person might be here supporting all this because it may not seem like it may impact business. But frankly, it does. And that is not just from the wonderful testimony you've already heard. There's a broader reach here. And the broader reach is I kind of feel very, I'm committed to the fact I think that there's something transformational going on with the way we live and also with what's coming. We all know all the elements to this in terms of lifestyle and depletion of all sorts of resources. But I think that part of the transformation is going to be in transportation and how we all move around and how we get along and commute from place to place. Part of the biggest and, in fact, the most effective component to business attraction, trying to attract new business here, is the quality of the labor pool, without question. And I've done business attraction economic development for almost 40 years, and everybody in the economic development department here will agree. It is the quality of the labor pool. And how this applies is that the labor pool, which is now in transition, is developing a preference, of course, for these younger, highly educated types, which are moving into Portland with tremendous velocity. We rank number 4 in the country right now in terms of the city and then the state as well, not quite as high, in terms of attracting the highly educated young cohort, which is our next economic driver, without question. And those are the types that we want to attract. Nationally, we're at about 10% reduction in that cohort. And most cities around the country are losing them. There are a few of us that are gaining them. These are the ones that are not only going to be the economic driver, but they're pushing a lot of these transformational changes. As a business person, we need talented labor. There's no question about it, to help drive innovation and to help drive the future generation of jobs in this state. And this is one particular element which absolutely attracts them to this area. A couple weeks ago, I was in Washington. Representative Blumenauer asked me to come back to assist in the Transportation Authorization Bill, and we were there at the same time as the National Bike Summit, which I observed how all these things link together. And the thing that impressed me more than any other factor at that summit was that in everybody's presentation from 50 states, all they talked about was us. We are the model. We are absolutely the model, and everybody wants to be like us. And why? It's because biking has become a gateway to attract the cohort that we're talking about and to improve all the public facilities, our land use laws, our modes of transportation, our mass transit. They all add up together. And with this Trails Initiative, we can actually force it to even move further and attract more dollars federally, as well as a broader concept on this thing to help assemble again a community which reacts stronger to this new transformational direction and as a result economically grow and prosper. So I see this as a huge issue in terms of our future, and I really hope you do support this.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Scott West. I am the Chief Strategy Officer for Travel Oregon, which is, does business as Travel Oregon, which is the Oregon Tourism Commission. And just for some point of reference, the tourism industry in 2000, new members are just out, but in 2000, $8.3 billion industry that employed over 90,000 Oregonians and contributed some in the neighborhood of between $300 and $350 million in state and local taxes on an annual basis. So it's a significant driver in the state of Oregon. From a policy perspective, the state's tourism industry has identified transportation as one of the key issues, has been over the last, since I've been around doing this for the last 15 years, both from the perspective of how it connects and also drives the industry's success. And the investment that Oregon makes in ensuring the safe movement of people around the state is vitally important to citizens, whether they're from Oregon or whether they're visiting. But interestingly enough, it's the non-motorized transportation successes that Oregon has enjoyed. Those are not going unnoticed by the state's visitors. Past and current transportation infrastructure investments from gas taxes into the communities are valued by the visitors, but also seen by the media. Portland's the only large city that's earned a platinum city status from the League of American Bicyclists, and it joins five other cities here in Oregon that are Ashland, Bend, Beaverton, Corvallis, Eugene, and Salem, which are also seen as meccas for bicycle transportation and since making these communities safe for commuting. But the successes of these communities in this arena help tell Oregon's story about taking care of the environment, building metropolitan areas that seek to provide transportation options and encourage active lifestyle is an important part of our ethos. It has been one that the visitors see. It's one that the media identify. Outdoor recreation in Oregon is a billion-dollar industry, and cycling plays a really strong role in that. We do visitor profile work with a company called Longwoods International and do this work all over the world, and they continue to show that Oregon's outdoor recreation reputation is extremely high when compared with our key competitors on the regional and national stage, and it's particularly true when you take a look at Oregon's road and mountain biking opportunities. These are seen as twice as attractive to the states on a national basis when compared to these cycling opportunities, and also leads in the way of our key competitors around the area, Washington, Idaho, Montana, California. So those are all seen as very viable, very strong, very big opportunities from the perspective of attracting visitors to the state. We see it as a key economic strategy in working with the state cycling community through the Bicycle Transportation Tourism Partnership for the last decade on working with partners from the manufacturing, transportation, tourism, economic development, planners, city members, around how that we structure an environment that connects all of these conversations, both urban, rural, commuting, and recreation. And through these efforts and through the efforts of the folks in this room that have already talked to you from the transportation side and the recreation side, you'll see that the media has responded. Just recently here, the New York Times, there's an article here that maybe is New York Times in this last week that identified Portland-style touring by bicycle. Also within the last week, last month, mountain biking action, which is an online mountain biking, has identified Bend, Oregon as the best mountain biking city in the country. And later this spring, Travel Oregon, acknowledging these efforts and working with our transportation folks and with the recreation folks and tourism partners around the state, will be launching a bicycle planning website that will bring all of these disciplines together so visitors, whether they're from the Oregon perspective looking to move out around the state or whether others looking into the state on ways to do that, will offer opportunities, whether urban, rural, valley, eastern Oregon, coast, or the mountains, on how to get the opportunities from the road and from the road or the mountain or off-road. I think what's interesting, I just returned this weekend from doing some, we have a program that we launched and a pilot program called the Rural Tourism Studio, which is community development around asset development mapping, taking a look at what the community really sees as its future and then bringing resources to bear. We work with economic development, work with rural development initiatives, we work with Mercy Corps, work with the University of Oregon, work with Alta Planning, work with a bunch of these, bringing forces together to create opportunities for communities for their development as we move forward. Wallowa County has identified bicycling, and they've identified agritourism as their key economic strategy with regard to developing their tourism product, and the bicycling product and the bicycling effort is looking at from a rural connection between both Union County and Baker County with Wallowa County, developing a system of trails that will connect those that area of the state in the future. So we're very supportive of the effort. We understand that it's a difficult time, but really believe that constructing a non-motorized process from which these opportunities can be funded outside of the normal transportation funding links makes real good sense. We encourage you to consider moving that forward. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Gentlemen. Hi, Randy.
Hi.
Hi, Scott.
Representative Berger, hi.
I see you more often than I see you. It used to be in the dark ages when I was young and connected to bicycles.
Not as dark as when I was young.
I understand that. that it was all about bike paths. And now you're talking trails. Am I right in that we've kind of changed the paradigm? Because I'm getting to a point here. And my point is this. I know of an awful lot of bike lanes in this state that were built in the 70s and 80s that are not currently being maintained at any level that would make them safe for anybody. Mm. Witness the entire Oregon coast and the 1976 trail, which my family rode, start to finish. And I was over there 2 weeks ago, and I said to my husband, no way would I let anybody that I loved on this trail at this current time. So what you're talking about here is re-upping what we have done in the past and let go of, if you will. And that bothers me because it's good dollars chasing after bad in some sense. And if you're talking about trails, I have some real worries about, okay, you want families to walk on them and bicycles to ride on them. These are kind of incompatible uses. I've been on trails where the bicyclists come roaring by, and I'm not real happy because I'm trying to track a three-year-old on that same trail. So, and I guess I'm worried that we statewide invest in what communities independently think they need, but where in here is more language about how do we know that it's really going to make a difference? Wallowa County thinks it is. We're investing lottery dollars, bonded lottery dollars, and what if Wallowa County's wrong and no tourists come there or nobody rides between Astoria and Lincoln City because you couldn't ride on it? I guess I have a lot of questions. It sounds good, but I've been there and seen it, and it didn't look as good when I was driving down the coast as what I saw in 1970 or 1984 when my family rode the entire way.
Mm-hmm. You first, me first.
Whatever. I'm happy to go ahead.
Very good point. And we might need some support here on the answer to that question. But I do know that this is for non-right-of-way kind of trails and could be pathways as well. So what you're talking about on 101 is within the right-of-way. So that would be transportation dollars that are already in certain buckets.
And they're not being used for bicycles.
And they're not being bucketed. That's why we're going to need some help behind us. But in terms of this particular bill, this is to fund non-right-of-way. So that it could be a pathway that's along the highway but not within the right-of-way, which parallels it, which hopefully might be better maintained. So this is a separate bucket.
Let me bring you one other example. Between my West Salem part of my district and Monmouth, there is a non-right-of-way trail, and I drive out that way quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
Nobody uses it. I'm sorry. It's been there for years. Just because you build it doesn't mean they come, I guess is my point. And, yeah, I've been downtown in Portland where they have these wonderful whizzing by, big, wide, where everybody knows there are, but they also have a huge population base to maintain it. And dollars are really scarce.
Yeah, sure.
And I understand tourism, but I have real qualms about taking this funding source and putting it to something that may not be maintainable, may not be sustainable, and doesn't have the kind of oversight that I am happy with. So I'm throwing these out. You don't have to answer every
one. No, I got a good, just a quick response to that. There are, as you have heard, certain communities in the state that are certainly more further advanced, and that's why this particular bucket, if it's created, would compel kind of a competitive approach to how those funds might be allocated for those communities that really do support biking. If Eugene or Bend or Medford or Corvallis or Portland, the Portland region, may be competing against Dallas to Salem, if there's no riders, then the money wouldn't be wasted.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Berg, certainly understand the concern and the question. One of the things that we believe with regard to putting together a more of an integrated approach where somebody can take a look from a statewide perspective and make determinations on how to travel, but also to actually be able to see and be educated on where these things actually do connect. Because I do think that as we've looked at them, that some of the efforts that have gone, as we've talked community by community or area by area, have been somewhat disjointed. And the opportunity to show the places where they do connect, so make it, and obviously from the perspective of the visitor industry, we're not interested in putting folks in places that are either unsafe or not being used. Certainly tantamount in our considerations. But we do believe, as you'll have other conversations around lots of other programs, around the opportunities and the education of what's out there and how to react and how what those places are that folks can take advantage of these opportunities, we think makes good sense. And so, like I said, looking at it from Randy's perspective around where those dollars actually find themselves, and also an integration of those safe opportunities that we share with our visitors, is the path that we're certainly going to pursue.
Thank you.
That help?
Nice to see you. Yes.
You too. How's your golf game? So is mine.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Jim McCauley, Tim Bernard. Jim Bernard, sorry.
Madam Chair, committee members, I guess I'm elected, so he's going to let me go first. Sorry, I've got a little bit of a cold. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm a member of the new five-member county commission, Clackamas County Commission, and thanks to that five membership, I have an opportunity to come here today. It's been a lot of joyous time in Salem instead of outdoors in the beautiful sunshine. Last year, I walked 900 miles just trying to get healthy because my sister asked me to be in the marathon. So like a crazy person, I started walking. I walked to Vancouver, Beaverton, Boring, along 99E to Canby, and Highway 43 to Westland, all based in Milwaukee, where I was the former mayor. Only just probably three or four times on Highway 43 and 99, I had to jump out of the way in fear of getting hit by passing motorists. I've been doing this personally to just get healthy. And, of course, Clackamas County's central goal is to eliminate our carbon footprint and, of course, create a healthy community. We're obviously growing. We have very little revenue, and we're fighting for every dollar we have. But we're working with our regional partners to make sure that we're investing in things that we think can make our communities healthy. And HB 2902 is yet another mechanism. And as an added benefit, I guess, I'm a small business owner in Milwaukee. I own an automotive repair business that's been in business since 1925, and I still support these options of, keeping people healthy, moving us around the community, and creating jobs. I also chaired North Clackamas Chamber of Commerce and have represented the business community along with others on the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation. And again, our goal is to reduce our carbon footprint. So thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim McCauley representing Washington County. I've handed out a letter that comes from Commissioner Scouten with Washington County as well. I think I just want to dwell on a couple of minor points. Senator Atkinson brought up the Greenway down in Southern Oregon. I grew up for a large part of my life in Bedford area. I think I've got him by about 8 years, though. So he would have been a little bit younger, and I would have been a little bit older, but I still remember the Greenway as a kid. It was a way to get around in Southern Oregon, but the probably the most disheartening part of it is it only went so far, and then you had to tackle the other routes, which were certainly much less desirable. The county very much supports this as part of their overall transportation strategy. It's important to the county for a lot of reasons. It's about neighborhood connectivity. It's about some of the attractions of future businesses, of which you've already heard a tremendous amount of testimony already. There's also some tourism value as our county explores some of those opportunities in the long term. There's also a school connectivity that kind of works along with the neighborhood side, and I can personally attest to this, and I live in Southwest Portland. There's a grade school about a quarter of a mile away, and about the other direction, a quarter of a mile away, is a middle school. And if there was about a 150-yard section that actually had a little bit more safe travel, it would be a terrific route for kids to be able to go to and from school. And unfortunately, it's, again, small portion. Everything else is there with either a pathway, a sidewalk, or some type of a bike lane, except for one small little 150-yard section. So from a personal standpoint, certainly see some of the value that these funds potentially would provide, not just my neighborhood, but other parts of the state. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? I don't. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I have Jerry Boharn. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, committee members. For the record, I'm Jerry Bohard, and I'm ODOT's Transportation Development Division Administrator. And House Bill 2902, which establishes the Non-Motorized Vehicle Transportation Fund with lottery bond revenue to fund grants and loans for transportation projects that benefit non-motorized vehicles and pedestrians. And it focuses on projects that provide dedicated corridors for non-motorized vehicles outside of the highway right-of-way. The current law requires that the Oregon Department of Transportation spend at least 1% of ODOT's portion of the state highway receipts on bicycle and pedestrian facilities within the highway right-of-way. And as you're aware, our Constitution does not allow us to go outside of the right-of-way. This bill will provide new funds for non-motorized vehicles and pedestrian facilities, but it does not reduce the amount of funds that ODOT will spend on bike-ped facilities. I would note that the bill specifically excludes projects that could be constitutionally funded from highway fund revenues from using these new funds. And this may have some unintended consequences, precluding use of new funds for projects that would link separate non-motorized corridors with existing facilities. You've heard them talk about bike lanes, schools, employment centers, transit centers. So there may be another way to address the preferences for use of these funds that could be established in the considerations before the bill. As you are aware, House Bill 2902 essentially follows the framework of the Connect Oregon legislation, sets specific considerations for our commission in selecting projects, identifies geographic regions, the allocations of funds, and so on. The one thing that I would note in here is that state highway funds cannot be used for administration of the program since the projects eligible for funding are outside of the highway right-of-way. And so, however, the bill does not specify what funds from the Non-Motorized Vehicle Transportation Fund could be used to administer the program. So in summary, ODOT currently uses 1% of its highway fund allocation for bike and pedestrian improvements. House Bill 2902 would establish another fund separate from ODOT's highway fund allocation to be used for non-motorized vehicles and pedestrian facilities outside of our right-of-way. And the state highway funds could not be used to administer the program because of the restriction of these funds by the Oregon Constitution. The bill would make valuable contributions, however, to the development of a network of non-motorized and pedestrian facilities to help make those modes viable alternatives to the use of the automobile. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Do I see any questions? Yes, Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Jerry, I know that, that we don't have a fiscal on this yet, but you indicate in your testimony that it's likely to have an impact on department operations. Do you have some sense of the magnitude of that impact?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, I'm not sure where the fiscal is. We did fill out a fiscal. We identified one position in there that I think was in the neighborhood of $75,000 for the FTE. Rulemaking would be required for this, developing an application and then doing working with stakeholders on the selection of projects, similar to what we did in Connect Oregon. I'm familiar with the Connect Oregon process, not necessarily the bike ped process. So we do feel that that one position would be able to manage this program adequately.
Follow up. Or another
Madam
question.
Chair, is that $75K for the biennium? And is that a full-time position or a half-time? What are we talking about?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, it's the annual cost of this position is $71,020, according to the fiscal.
So for clarification, do you anticipate that it only require 1 year? Is that then a limited duration position? Or are you anticipating it would be twice that for the biennium?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, I think it would depend on ultimately what the bill showed for the program. If it's ended up being a continual program, then this would need to be a full-time position.
Okay.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions for you. So thank you. And with that, Randy Tucker has some follow-up. And I do personally want to follow up a little bit on the line of questioning from Representative Berger, because despite what it sounded like when Scott Bricker talked, Springfield has a pretty good system of bike trails in our community, and we didn't necessarily need Eugene to come over the river or over the freeway just to bring a bike trail into our community. As a matter of fact, we considered that our connection maybe out, you know, towards the other side. But I live very close to a bike trail that we use all the time. But maintenance is a problem. When we're using dollars to put these facilities in, we don't really keep dollars to maintain them. And we're never looking at going back to do maintenance. We're always just looking forward to the new project. And so that is a bit of a concern for me. And with that...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Randy Tucker. I'm the Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro, and I also wanted to follow up a little bit on Representative Berger's questions and the question that you just asked. First of all, I'm glad we actually included the Springfield map in the PowerPoint to demonstrate that we do know that Springfield has its own system, and there's my proof. And I'm aware that your mayor is also supportive of these kinds of investments as well. I wanted to just briefly, let me just first of all respond to your maintenance comment. I completely agree with your comment on maintenance. My understanding is that when I hang around a bunch of transportation people a fair amount, when TriMet goes to Congress for money for a new project, they have to demonstrate that they've got the operations money also to cover 20 years worth of operations for a project. And I think something analogous does make sense, not just for trails, but for our entire transportation system. As you're well aware, maintenance is not just an issue for trails. It's an issue for all of our roads, and you've seen presentation after presentation, I think, from the League of Cities and Association of Counties on that point. So I just want to agree with you on that. The question that Representative Berger asked, I'm not going to be able to exactly come back at you with, but essentially I think it was a question of accountability. Who makes the decisions about what projects we're going to build if we enact a program like this, and how do we make sure that we're not building trails to nowhere that aren't going to be used? And so I have two responses to that. First of all, the bill itself gives that decision-making power to the Oregon Transportation Commission with the consultation of cities, counties, and metropolitan service districts. But my second answer is that this bill, as Representative Bailey commented when he opened, is not necessarily a perfect bill, and I, as someone who has been working on it, I'm very open to having a conversation about how to make it better. And if there are ways to make to create better projects, to ensure better projects out of a piece of legislation that would open up the opportunity for these facilities to be constructed with partial state money off the road right of way, then I'm certainly one that's willing to sit down and try to work out the way that can be the best bill it can be. So we don't want to build trails that no one uses, and we don't want to build trails that don't get maintained and therefore no one uses. And the last comment I want to make is on the comment of on the point of no one uses certain facilities. One of the things that we've found in the work in the Portland region, in the work of the Blue Ribbon Committee and others, is that trails get built piecemeal. They get built a little bit at a time because there isn't a large sum of money. And in our region, anyway, we're often purchasing the right-of-way without using the right of eminent domain, and so we're waiting for pieces to become available and piecing it together. There are some right-of-ways that are available. For instance, the Sullivan's Gulch corridor along the freeways is a high-demand area in the Portland area. The point I'm trying to make is if you can build an entire facility at once and not pieces, then you really see a much larger bump in ridership. And I think the example of that, and I think Senator Monroe can probably speak to it better than I can, and others in the room probably as well, would be the Springwater Corridor, where once the gaps were filled in, the usage skyrocketed. And so I think it's really important to build complete facilities that are actually useful to people and can get them from point A to point B. And that enables them to be used as real transportation facilities to connect jobs and schools and shopping and recreation and places people really need to go. So I'd be happy to answer any questions myself. I just wanted to come up and respond to a couple of things that came up.
Representative Schaffler and then Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, that Springwater Corridor is wildly successful. If anything, it's our daughter, who wasn't a strong rider in her youth. She's only 15, she's still in her youth, but it was downright dangerous because she's all over the trail like this. It's, you know, a couple, 3-4 years ago, and there's some people that just drive too fast on the damn thing, and there's a policing question, too, of people out there that are living out there and having dope and stuff like that. But it is wildly successful, and it goes right through my district, and I'm a big supporter of it, which leads me to my question. On that, there has to be some kind of data showing economic multiplier and revenue. And I don't know what the revenue fiscal balance, if it's a wash or you're going to create jobs. A lot of skilled tradespeople built that bridge going over 99, and I wonder if there's any data showing there what kind of multiplier we have for every off-road dollar that we put into these trails, because I think that, if we invest money this session and we know we're going to get a solid return on our investment, then it's worth it. I mean, I think taking this lottery bonding money right now in this economic climate is a hard sell unless we have that kind of data backing it up.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, I believe that there was some work done in the context of the Blue Ribbon Committee for trails to show the return on investment if we were to build out the system that the committee was envisioning. I don't have those numbers at the tip of my tongue, and I'd be happy to bring those back, and I'll certainly, you know, find what I can find and bring it right to your representative and to the committee.
And if you could give it to
sure, of course.
Patrick, you can give it out. So, Representative Widener, and then...
No, okay. David. I'm pretty sure there was some work done like that.
There was done.
Yeah, thank you.
Just one real quick chair before you go, or question before you go. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair
and question. Have you checked with any private organizations? Because I know Weyerhaeuser has a lot of land that basically starts at about North Plains and a road that could take you all the way to Cannon Beach that sits off, and it's a rural route. And there's lots of options like that out there, too, because I'm with Representative Berger on some of this, because once we start implementing all these trails, then all of a sudden we're going to start running into maintaining them. Then we're going to run into policing them, because you're going to have the guys who are flying on their bikes, and you're going to have Representative Schaffler, who probably is worse than a little kid on a bike and guys running into him when he's going down the bike trail. So there's a whole other series that we're going to run into the more we start implementing this. So, and that's going to be regulations and everything else for these trails and speed limits and different issues like that. So,
Madam Chair, President Widener, I want to try to, I don't know the answer to the first part of your question, which is whether we've looked at any private landowners and whether there might be some corridors on those lands that might be useful for, at least if you're speaking about forest landowners outside the urban areas. Yeah. Certainly, we work with private landowners within the urban areas to fill in the gaps of the urban trails in our part of the world, and I'm sure that's true in the other communities that, that have these trail systems. And I do know that, and I'm not the guy that knows very much about it, but I do know that there's a conversation that, that has started with the Forest Service about some possibilities of trail development up toward Mount Hood. So I jotted down your question about private landowners. I'll see what I can find out for you from our real trail eggheads. And then, on the question of policing, yes, important to make sure that these facilities are safe or they won't get used.
Thank you. Representative Bailey, then Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up to Representative Schaffler's point, in that I hope that the data that you have, or if you're looking at data, will include projections of some of the potential federal match that we heard about and perhaps the net benefit to the state of that investment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to follow up on Representative Widener's. One of the issues you'll run into with private forest land is a liability issue. They've all, in the past 10 years or so, gated their roads, open them during hunting season, but not all of them are opening them anymore. So there's a lot of liability issue. And then you have a patchwork of private, public forest lands, so I'm not sure how that would work to piece that together.
In response to Representative Boone, the only reason I know about it is Weyerhaeuser does lock all their gates for motorized traffic, and that'd be something we'd be dealing with, but they do let you ride behind their gates on bicycles, so, and they're okay with that, or hiking in. They just don't want motorized vehicles behind them, but that could change if you start sending a bunch of people out there, too, so, which then you'd screw up my elk hunting if we do that, so maybe don't check with them.
My phone is off, Madam Chair. I hear that buzzing.
I don't have one, so I don't know who that is. And well, and that's all of the people that I had signed up. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. And thank you. We are adjourned.